Welcome back. Okay, good start. All right, David, do you have any more words of encouragement for us?
Not many.
Welcome back to Hoop 60. I'm Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs, who has got problems over there. John Titel with
I'm
us.
I'm having technical difficulties, but I think I'm okay now.
A three-man show tonight. This is a show that where we go over everything and anything that is going on. Anything and everything that's going on in the college basketball world. And what we like to do is go through all the major conferences, review the games that went on the past week, and look at some of the upcoming schedules. But I like to start these shows, even though there's just three of us, let's do it anyhow, with a little blind resume. We've done it the last few weeks, and I think it's a good place to start tonight off as well, if we can get some screens up here. Here we go. Blind resume time.
And we can always figure out who it is.
Yeah. You guys could probably figure out what it is, but here is the two teams. The team on the left there, when you look at the metrics, the metrics are a lot better on the team on the left. On the other hand, when you look at them, they both have two bad losses, both at home. And the team on the right has won more games in the top two tiers and a lot more of those being true road games. So, Titel, let me start by asking you, is there – do you have a thought of which team looks better just looking at it in a blind resume sample, or maybe they're even?
They seem pretty even. If I had to lean one way, I'd lean left only because of the better record and the better metrics. In terms of identifying the team, some of the things that stand out to me are on the left side, we have a team that's lost twice to two top five teams and has a third top five team remaining. On the right, we have a team who's lost a horrible Tier 4 loss, but has some good Tier 1s, although so does the left team.
And David, but how about that one? If you look at I know you're a big fan of road wins. You look on the right there, you've got those five wins on the road in the top two tiers. The left, you've got neutral wins, but only one true road win in those top two tiers.
Right, and that sticks out to me. Now, again, when you evaluate these teams, you have to look at it a little more closely, like who are they beating on the road? What is that team's record at home? But generally, when you're talking about top tier two wins, you're talking about teams that are winning 80% of their games at home or a little more. So I don't know who this is. When you reveal it, it might not look impressive as far as who the teams are that they beat, but if you look a little bit below the surface, maybe they won games that were hard to win. And I think as we saw last year, particularly with the selection of Belmont, who won at Murray State, won at Lipscomb, and then won at Austin Peay, that the committee looks a little bit more deeply than just what was the ranking of the team that you beat. But I can't figure out who these teams
are. The team on the left is a team that everybody's had in their brackets most of the season, although slipping towards the edge of the bottom of the brackets. That's the St. Mary's Gales. Team on the right should be coming up any second now. Maybe not. Maybe we're going to go to replay.
We're just
first
off to a great start here.
There it is.
How appropriate that they're looking at replay. Oh, there it is.
The replay is over, but the team on the right Titel, the South Carolina Gamecocks, a team we have not discussed much this year. And I know you may even have a few thoughts on this team as we pull up a team that's won three straight now heading into this week's two big games this week.
I do have some thoughts. The reason we have not discussed them earlier is the loss to BU and the loss to Stetson, which are very hard to overcome. Obviously, beating Kentucky will certainly help. As far as Frank, he's gotten the job done. They started 8-7, including that home loss to Stetson, which is almost inexcusable. They have won 8-10 to improve to 16-19 overall. Big Saturday coming up when they host LSU. They do not have to face Kentucky or Auburn again until the conference tourney, which is good news. Top 15 in the nation at guarding the three-point line. Bottom 15 in the nation at making free throws. Those are not going to both cancel each other out. I think that they're going to get bit with the free throws. The key is freshman guard Jermaine Cousinard. When he starts, they're 8-2. When he doesn't, they're 8-7.
I have a question for you, Titel. You said that it's good that they're not playing Auburn or Kentucky. When you're sort of straddling the bubble like this, don't you sort of – could you argue that it's bad that they're not playing those teams because those are the types of games, if you were to win them, that could really slingshot you forward? I mean, beating Georgia at home just isn't going to make much of a difference.
How about winning at Mississippi State, though, which they've got to do before LSU did?
Oh, yeah, that's certainly good. They certainly have chances to make cases for themselves. Alabama, another big game. Alabama, not a tournament team, but a game that if you beat them there, you should get credit for because they're good at home.
It's a valid point, and I think that when you are a bubblicious team, you do need to have some tier one on your resume, and obviously you're not going to get that by playing at Vanderbilt. But the fact is, I don't think they can beat Kentucky again. Obviously they have once, but I don't think they can do it again. I don't think they can beat Auburn, although you never know. So the fact that they have these non-Kentucky and Auburn games coming up, if they win all six, they're looking great. Even if they lose you and can win the other five, they're okay. If they go 3-3, they're cooked.
I think 5-1 is realistic with this schedule. I think the big game is the game before the LSU, the game, that game at Mississippi State. Kind of a bubblicious game, a Mississippi State team that's – let me pull up the SEC standings here, but a Mississippi State team that's still in the hunt for a bit, at least, David, as we get these standings up on the screen.
Yeah. Coming
off of their win at Arkansas over the weekend, Arkansas team that is fading fast.
So Mississippi State, a little bit of Arkansas in reverse. Arkansas, like, really had it going early, and their motor is stalled out, whereas Mississippi State, they sputtered along, but they still have work to do, but they are playing better now than they were in November and December. And if you look at some of those early games that they lost, had they been playing then like they are now, they probably don't lose them, and they're probably pretty far inside the bubble. I see Titel here in the chat, a big game at Florida coming up. Is that right? Big week ahead for Florida. I'm reading the cue cards, and I shouldn't be.
We'll get to the upcoming schedule in a second. Though, real quick, though, Saturday was a upset crazy day, though, in this conference. Kentucky survived against Ole Miss, but the other two of the top three teams that – probably the only three teams that are looking safe for NCAA bids at this point. Titel, we see Auburn go down to Missouri. LSU go down to Alabama. It was just a head-scratcher in this conference this weekend.
It was. I mean, I think that it's really up for grabs once you get outside of Kentucky and Auburn. I'm still not sure if I believe in LSU, and obviously Auburn did not look good. But I think this has – if I have to set an over-under on bids, I'll set it at – 5 and not feel super confident about 5, but I think they will get 5, but I'm not super confident.
I'll take the under on that. I think it's
something
like 4.
Yeah, I'm taking the under on that.
Florida's the other team there, as you mentioned already, David. This week they're going to be hosting Arkansas and at Kentucky. They go 2-0 this week, and I think they're pretty solid at that point, but that's a tough order.
Yeah, but what if they do 1-1? Arkansas, a team that's fading, and a bad road team, so how much credit do you
I'll tell you what, if they go 1-1, but they lose the Arkansas game and win at Kentucky, I'll take Florida.
Oh, yeah, I think that's better. But you know, if they beat Arkansas, then they're beating a team that's behind them, so does that really move you forward? And if you lose to Kentucky, you're losing to a team on the road that is superiorly ahead of you, so does that really hurt you? It could be that they just kind of remain kind of static here.
Yeah. The big week, we already mentioned the big week for South Carolina, of course, if they can get back in this tournament, get into this tournament discussion.
Yeah.
At Mississippi State hosting LSU. But let's move right on along. Let's move over to the ACC, where we just we're recording this Monday night a little after 9 p.m., where we just watched North Carolina play like North Carolina and blow the game against Notre Dame this evening, as they've done all season. But let's take a look at some of these other games that took place. And I guess we got to talk a little Louisville. David, let me start with you with this Louisville week here, because it was a bad week for the Cardinals.
Well, you know, we all had road trips in college, and some went better than others, and this was a road trip that went very, very bad. Losing to Georgia Tech in a game where they didn't play well, but it was close and they still had a chance to win, and then losing to Clemson in a game where they astonishingly played poorly and were just blown off the court. Now, is Louisville's ceiling suddenly lower than it was a week ago? I don't think it is. I think sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes you get what's called sort of undermatched fatigue, as I call it. Like when you're into the middle of February and you're on pace to be a protected seed, it's kind of hard to get up for it's not the beginning of the season where everything's kind of new and exciting and you're looking forward to all these teams, and it's not the end where you have the conference tournament and the NCAA tournament. I do think teams kind of start to get a little bored with their seasons, and maybe that's what happened to Louisville a little bit, but that is not – that's at most that's an explanation. That is not excusing how atrocious they looked at Clemson. I mean, that was just a really bad.
Let me ask you about that Clemson game, the Clemson team in particular.
Really hard to figure this team out. So the good news is that in the past 5 weeks, somehow they've beaten Carolina, Duke, Syracuse, and Louisville, despite not having a single starter over 6'8". Any other year, you'd think put that team in the tournament like protected seed. The bad news, they did lose 12 of their first 23 games, and even though you see their strength of schedule is decent at 39, but I don't know how they did that, because it must have been all losing to good teams, because their best performance in non-conference play was a 2-point overtime win over TCU in Vegas. Good news, they finish off the regular season with the Seminoles and four other teams outside the KenPom top 80, so I think they can go 4-1 and finish 17-13 in the regular season, which is not great, but they have a lot of good teams who they've beaten on their resume. They're probably going to need to pull up at least one amazing upset in the conference tourney. If they do, I still don't think they're in, but I think the selection committee is going to have their resume handy.
Yeah, there are so many tier two and three losses there, but you're right. You pick up that Florida State win, especially something in the conference tournament. It's I guess we could look at it then. On the other hand, they could also go ahead and do what NC State did last week, where we think about them being a tournament team, go to Boston College and lose over the weekend. And I'm just ready to put NC State. Let me pull up their profile against Clemson here. In fact, David, I'm ready to just throw them away. I had them from personally on my bubble to pretty much off the sheet entirely when you throw in a third tier three loss like that.
And there were weeks that we had NC State not just on the bubble but in the field, and you look at the top of the resume, it tops out pretty decent by bubble standards with the wins at Virginia, Greensboro. They probably deserve more credit for that than what people watching this may realize. And at Syracuse, you know, pretty solid for a bubble team if you can just avoid stubbing your toes. But then you look at North Carolina, you know, that's just an odd thing to say, but the loss to North Carolina is really
a bad loss to North Carolina. It really is.
Right. And you look at all of, not just that one, if you go back to it real quick, Chad, their problem is just the sheer number of losses to non-tournament teams, like the three you see down there, but then Georgia Tech, Clemson, Virginia Tech, and Memphis, not tournament teams either.
No, they're not. Well, maybe Clemson. We just talked about that.
Well, yeah, maybe.
But that's going to take some work by the Tigers. Week ahead in the ACC should be coming up on the screen any second now with Duke, NC State, Syracuse, Louisville. You know, if Syracuse can get back in the bubble talk, they really, really, really need that one against a struggling Louisville team. Yeah. We've got coming up this weekend. I guess you've got Virginia road game. Louisville, Florida State next Monday night is probably one of the biggest ones to circle on that list.
That might be the only one. Pittsburgh sort of outside the bubble. Florida State looking to hold serve. Syracuse, perhaps if they win that, they're back in looking to hold serve. Virginia looking to hold. I mean, you don't really have any games to where there's a whole lot at stake other than teams trying to hold on to what they already have.
All right, let's keep things rolling along here. Let's take a look at the Big East, where we had a rare Monday night Big East. Used to be big Monday, so you know, big week, big night for the Big East Conference way back. But Xavier found a way to get by St. John's in a game they really needed, especially to get that conference record up close to 500 finally. And looking like this conference should be able to put six teams in, and maybe even seven, which we'll get to in a minute here. But let's start with the top of the conference, Tytel, and not necessarily even Seton Hall with a couple head-scratching losses, but the team that beat Seton Hall over the week. How about the Creighton Blue Jays there?
It's amazing. Seton Hall looked like they were going to clinch this conference by today or something. I mean, Creighton has come out of nowhere, and Seton Hall has been fading a bit. Creighton lost three of their first five conference games, and I was starting to doubt them, but they proved me wrong. They've won 7 of 8 since then, 20-6 overall. I can't think of a more impressive set of back-to-back road wins by anyone this year. The Blue Jays' last two road wins at Villanova, at Seton Hall. That impressed the hell out of me. Tough week ahead. They're at Marquette Tuesday. They host Butler Sunday. As usual, they get it done with three-point shooting. Top 20 in the nation, 38% behind the arc. Their X factor off the bench, Denzel Mahoney, the junior forward. Past month, he has scored 15 points a game in their 7 wins and 0 points per game in their 1 loss. When he doesn't score, they don't win.
Yeah, I'm just loving this Crane profile right now, too. When you look at the fact they've got 4 wins away from home against the top half of Tier 1, that is as good as anybody in the nation probably right now.
For sure.
I mean, they've got 6 losses, so that doesn't put them in the one-line discussion, but they're in the protected seed discussion, definitely. David, I want you to talk about another team, though, that had a huge, huge win because the old factor of, hey, let's be missing a couple of our best players and make us play better, Georgetown Hoyas, go to Butler without Yurtseven, without one other starter. And you know, I think they actually got a couple guys, that they picked up off of campus to go with them on the trip to play this game, did they not?
they're getting close to that point. And the other remarkable thing is that they led tip to buzzer. I mean, you want to talk about a team that is as tough as nails. I don't know if they can get there because they've just been hammered so much with off the field or off the court incidents and injuries. And I mean, like, you know, Tytel last week accurately described their bench as just a rubber band.
And a paperclip.
And a paperclip, a rubber band and a paperclip. And it's just the fact that they can still go on the road and win a game like that is pretty incredible. And you really are, at least I am, I'm starting to find myself pulling for them a little bit. Their next 2 games appear to be winnable.
And that would put them at 7-7 in conference. And now you got to say they're an NCAA tournament team, do you not?
Yeah. And can they hold on down the stretch? Like those last 2 are really tough. The Creighton and Villanova
really
game.
Tough, actually.
Well, yeah, the last 6 are really tough. But, like, to close back-to-back games against Creighton and Villanova, 2 teams that, we just got kind of done discussing how good they are. And then you figure the Big East tournament, like, if they can't get into the quarterfinals with such a slim bench, like, you know, are they going to run out of gas by the time they get to their 2nd or 3rd game? But they do have a path to the NCAA tournament. It's not an easy one, but they've played themselves into a situation that I never thought they would be in, considering how limited their personnel is. And I'm sure Tytel can share even more. He's been covering the Hoyas this year. But what a story.
No, you covered it pretty well. They were missing Young, Yurtseven and McClung, and they got rid of, as you mentioned, Akinjo, LeBlanc, and 2 others early this year. I really don't know how they're doing it. I think Ewing deserves a lot of credit for getting the team to believe in them. He said in multiple press conferences I attended, he's like, the only good thing is that, like, for all the guys who are complaining about playing time, he's like, well, you can't use that excuse anymore. Have a 40-minute game and do your best.
Since we've always had this season in the Big East, we're going to have a lot of big games this week. Crane at Marquette coming up here Tuesday night. Butler at Seton Hall. We've got Villanova at Xavier this weekend. We've got Butler at Creighton on Sunday. So a lot of games to circle here in the Big East as we keep going this weekend, the last few weeks of the regular season. Right. Let's roll right on over to the Big Ten Conference, in fact, which David, let me start with you. Are you finally a believer in the Maryland Terrapins after they went and found a way to somehow win a game at Michigan State over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a believer in them as a protected seed. I don't think I like them on the 2 line, and I still don't get like. Let's pull them up. Okay, there they are.
Pull them and Penn State both up. Go ahead.
Yeah, and let's pull Penn State up, and everybody, including and I don't just mean everybody at Oops HD. I mean everybody. Period. Has been ranking Maryland ahead of Penn State. Well,
deservedly so. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's first of all, Penn State beat Maryland. They won at Michigan State. They won at Michigan. They won at Purdue. I mean, they've been winning. To me, that's a little bit more impressive. Well, I think they top out a little bit higher.
But David, first of all, when you look over at Maryland, they don't have any losses outside of Tier 1A. You've got 3 of those on the Penn State roster resume. You've got 3 losses. I include 2 losses to a loss to a Minnesota team and a loss to an Ole Miss team that are not going to be in the NCAA tournament.
Michigan, you got to win at Purdue. A win at Georgetown.
You have 3 Tier 1A wins away from home on Maryland. Same amount of wins away from home on Tier 1A they have on Penn State. All you've got, the only thing I'll give you is that Penn State beat Maryland, but they beat them at home. And you said home wins don't count. That's your own argument.
As much. Home wins don't count as much.
But let me go, Titan, what about this the Penn State team there on the right?
And then if you look at Florida State and all the games they've won away from.
I'm not talking about Florida. David, wrong conference. There's my buzzer.
Nittany Lions have been great. They did lose three in a row in early January, but they've turned things around. 8 straight wins to get to 20-5 overall. Each of their next 5 are against possible tourney teams in Illinois, Indiana, Rutgers, Iowa, Michigan State. So they will be tested down the stretch. What's amazing, much like Georgetown is winning with guys injured, they've done it without their sophomore shooting guard, Myreon Jones. He's been out the last 3 games with an unspecified illness. Hasn't stopped them because senior big man Mike Watkins, super efficient this month. 11 points, 9 boards a game, that's fine. He's only had 2 turnovers all month. And he's doing it in 19 minutes a game. It's not like Georgetown where he's playing 40 minutes a game. He's doing this in half a game. And lastly, Chad, is the Maryland at Rutgers game going to be the game of the year in the Big Ten?
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. If Rutgers beats Michigan this week, they're coming up Wednesday night here. They're playing Michigan. That could be the game for Rutgers getting the NCAA tournament bid. Unless Rutgers finds a way to finally win a road game. And, you know, the stat is that no team has ever gotten an at-large bid at the NCAA tournament without at least 3 road wins. When we look at what Rutgers has done this year on the left there, I really think if they can win these 2 home games, they could be the first team to ever do it with only 1 road win. But they got to win the Michigan and the Maryland game, or they got to win at least 1, if not 2, of these road games.
Winning 2 would pretty much put them in.
Not going to win at Penn State, so it's okay. Got to be win Wisconsin and Purdue, or win 1 of Wisconsin, Purdue, and win 1 or 2 games of the Big Ten tournament.
Okay, Chet, don't ask me how I know this. The trivia is 3 wins away from home and only two. Like, there's been teams with 2 road wins to make it, but they won additional games away from home, either in the conference tournament or.
So split those 2 and win a conference tournament game would get you to the 3 then.
Yeah, it would.
Win at Penn State and it becomes moot.
Probably, yeah. And this is a good Rutgers team. They've played well on the road. They had Maryland beat. Maryland probably a little overvalued, but Rutgers still took them to the wall at Maryland.
They took Michigan State to the wall. That score was not completely indicative, but they took Maryland to the wall. They took Ohio State to the wall. They were right there with Iowa. They were right there on the road game in Illinois. They were right there at the game in Madison Square Garden against Michigan. It's just been these close losses on the road. So we'll see what happens, especially this weekend with Wisconsin and next week with Penn State. Because don't just say Rutgers is going to lose at Penn State. I'm not ready to necessarily say that.
The ECAC rivalry.
And as Titel says, if Rutgers played the Golden State Warriors at the rack, who would win at
I'm
the rack?
I'm serious. Like, that's amazing.
This has always been an amazing home court for Rutgers, but the fact that they just have not been good, you haven't really seen it. With this team winning games this year, this is maybe the toughest arena in the Big Ten to play in, believe it or not.
This is
a conference with a lot of great, great places like Assembly Hall and the like in it. But let's take a look at the upcoming schedule in the Big Ten. We mentioned a few of the games that we are going to be seeing, and we didn't get a chance to discuss all these teams because we could spend probably an hour on the Big Ten, but lots of interesting games this week. Illinois on the road at Penn State, Purdue, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Iowa, Michigan, Purdue, Penn State, Indiana, Rutgers, Wisconsin, we mentioned. Lots of important games. Maryland at Ohio State on Sunday.
Not one that you mentioned, but this Indiana-Minnesota game, this is a road game that Indiana absolutely needs. They're such a home court hero. I think they're outside the bubble right now simply because they've done so little away from home. And, that is probably one of their more winnable home games or road games, remaining.
Yeah, if you look at the net, Indiana well below Minnesota, well below Purdue. But, I mean, when you look at the overall record, there's reasons to keep Minnesota and Purdue out. At least Indiana has the good overall record. But you're right. They need wins, road wins, things that will bump that net up because that 63 net is a little bit rough to put in the tournament. Let's go jump over to the Big 12 where, as we are recording this, we've got a game going on. It's Iowa State and Kansas. I think Kansas has a lead here in the first half. But let's start with, I guess I've got the number 1 team in the nation in Baylor. We got the number 3 team in the nation in Kansas. And beyond that, Tytel, we had a West Virginia team that a couple weeks ago was right there with the committee on their bracket reveal. Maybe not quite there if we did it again this weekend, though.
Correct. This one can be explained away, though, as you look at the strength of schedule column. Kansas 1, West Virginia 2. It's not that they're losing to Tier 4 teams. They're losing to the best teams in the country. They were 14-2 just 1 month ago. They lost four straight road games. They fell to 18-7. And, of course, no shame at all in losing consecutive games to Kansas and Baylor. Good news is their freshman power forward, Oscar Tshiebwe, he's playing like McDonald's All-American he is. Against those two number one seeds, 13 points and 10 boards in the losses combined, average. They got five winnable games left, so they could be 23-7 when a one-loss Baylor team comes to Morgantown for the regular season finale. That will be amazing if it happens. Number three in the nation at defending the three-point line, under 28% allowed. Unfortunately, number 311 in the nation at making threes, just over 30%. They cannot make a free to save their life. Good news, only one senior among the top nine in the rotation, so the future is almost as bright as their net ranking, which, as you can see, number 10.
Yeah, and David, now the Big 12 and probably the last 5-6 years, it's always been, are they a 7-bid team league? Are they an 8-bid league? Are they a 9-bid league? You know, lots of bubble teams. I think we've got a clear-cut 5 bids here, and I mean, the only question, maybe if Oklahoma falls apart, they could slip out, but I think the top four are very solid, maybe even the top five at this
point. I think four solidly, and Oklahoma is in, but they're sort of in that range between being inside the bubble but not in the top half of the bracket sort of range. So
But nobody else really has a shot at this point from the bottom five.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you know, unless they went out to the championship game and beat, you know, just go on an unbelievable tear.
Somebody goes and wins at Baylor and at Kansas, it's a different story. But
Yeah.
If Iowa State comes back and wins this game tonight, we could talk about that. But I don't think it's going to happen.
Probably not even then. But, but is Oklahoma, how safe are they? Because, like, I mean, is holding serve going to do it?
Let's pull up their profile real quick here. Yeah. We got a moment, and then I want to look at it because there's a lot of good games coming up in the Big 12 this week.
Yeah.
Beyond the one that we're watching right now, where. But, you know, if you look at Oklahoma, you know, they've got Baylor at home this coming up in a couple nights here, which is one of the big games we got this week. They got the trip to Morgantown, but then they got probably four others that they really should win. So, yeah, I think they're safe if they win those four.
Yeah, so
Texas Tech, a tournament team, but I think you could beat them at home.
Yeah, so, I mean, if they beat Oklahoma State, Texas, and TCU, is that enough? I think that gets them the 9-9. They might need to avoid a loss in their first tournament game or something like that. But
you lose to TCU in the Big 12 tournament, you're going to be sweating things out. You lose to Baylor in the Big 12 tournament, you're not going to be. But they might need four wins to feel safe at this point.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. All right.
But it could be this week. If it's this week against Baylor, they should feel really safe.
Yeah, I mean, they should feel pretty safe.
But Tytel's actually a huge week for Baylor. After the trip to Oklahoma, they're hosting Kansas on Saturday.
Yes, unfortunately, that has all the makings of a trap game tomorrow night in Norman, but I think they'll be okay. As you said, Oklahoma is sliding. I think Kansas at Baylor is one of on the short list for games of the year, though. Two number one seeds, right?
I think it would be. Yeah, I think the first one was. And But it's one of those games that, like, I think it's more of a showcase game than a stakes game, because at that point, I think regardless of how it plays out, they would both be on the one line.
Yeah, I don't think either one that falls off the one line for losing this game. But Baylor goes 0-2 this week. It could be, right. You know, they could be at the point where they're down towards the bottom of the one line.
Right. Yeah.
And let's jump over to the Pac-12 conference, and a conference that I think, you know, I mean, I think it clearly is a way better than we've seen in Pac-12 in recent years. I think we've got three teams here in Colorado, Oregon, and Arizona that'll be. Maybe not four seeds are better, but maybe five or six seeds are better. That they're up there in the top, you know, top one third of the bracket, maybe. But but beyond that, we've got a red hot Tytel Arizona State team, winners of five in a row.
I don't like to admit it, but you are 100% correct. So they lost three of their first four in conference, mostly because they had a front loaded schedule. They played Arizona, Oregon, Colorado as three of their first four games. The good news, they survived. They've won 7 of 8 since then to get to 17-8 overall. They do not face the Buffaloes again since they opened the season against them in Shanghai. They do not face Arizona again. We're not going to talk about how that game worked out, the rematch. They do host the Ducks on Thursday. That is going to be tough. If they win that one, They are looking solidly on the right side of the bubble. We shall see. Junior shooting guard Alonzo Verge, he was scoreless against the Ducks in their first game on January 11th. Since then, he's been great this month. 5 wins, 20 points a game in those 5 wins. But the thing is, can we just agree to pencil them in for the first 4, a.k.a. the Bobby Hurley? Yeah. All they do.
That might be where they're headed, especially with the Oregon schools at home this week and the trip to USC ahead still. So there's some tough games there. Arizona was on the right, same exact remaining schedule, of course, the way the Pac-12 schedules. But
how about Arizona's come to life here? I think they've won their last 3 games on the road. That was the one sort of sticking point that that they've kind of overcome. And
there's only one Pac-12 team that has 2 road sweeps so far this season, and it's Arizona with the double Washington and the double Bay Area games. Go ahead.
You look at the way that their schedule's playing out, all those remaining games are winnable. Now, at USC is going to be rough, and certainly Oregon at home. But Oregon, not the best road team. I think Arizona can really finish strong and enter the tournament with a big head of steam. A little off script here, Chad, not a team that we're looking at all, really, for being on the bubble. But UCLA, much improved as the year has gone on. I know that he's a little Yosemite Sam, and we all kind of like to laugh at him, and he never, ever seemingly could ever get past the round of 32. But Mick Cronin doing a really good job at UCLA, at least this past couple weeks, has them playing at a higher level. It's probably too little too late. They're simply going to run out of season before they put together a profile that is even NIT worthy. But playing much better now, and is unbelievable as this is, 1 game out of first.
Well, yeah, and if they wind up with a favorable seed in the Pac-12 tournament, I mean, Tytel, this UCLA team could be dangerous in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, they all are. I was glad David made that point, because he was saying that they're out of it. Like, half the conference is a game out of first place. Like, totally up for grabs. I still think the Ducks are the favorite, but they're far from a lock. And the fact is, like, I was horrified when UCLA came to Tucson a couple weeks ago and beat us by double digits, looking like a decent loss now.
Yeah.
The upcoming schedule, USC with the Colorado-Utah trip. We mentioned the Oregon-Arizona State games as well. Those are the games to look at.
Question to the experts. Are we kind of done with Stanford?
I'm done with him. Tytel, is there anything left? I mean, I'd say that, you know, there's still a point where they could win a few in a row and get in the tournament, but they're not playing like that at all, are they? They're playing like garbage, I think.
I think they are my very last team in the field as of Sunday, and they're certainly trending downward. And winning at Washington used to be a hard thing. Now that you see Washington is at the bottom of the Pac-12, it's doable. If they get swept at the Washington schools, I think we can get rid of them. But I don't think they're going to get swept at the Washington schools.
I think if they pull off the sweep, which is a doable sweep, they're back in there. But let's talk about another team that is on the one line right now for most people, number 2 team in the nation, the Gonzaga Bulldogs here, now 26-1 overall, off of only 1 game this week where they won. David, we talked about St. Mary's a little bit at the top of the show, but what about the Zags up there? I mean, let me ask you this. Is this team going to get back to the Final Four?
They're no.
Looking that good, aren't they?
Yeah, no? I mean, they're looking that good. Tall order, like, they certainly are good enough to do it. I don't know if I'm going to pick them into the Final Four, but I know that they haven't been quite as tested as, say, Baylor or, you know, a few of the other teams on the 1 and 2 line. But the one thing they've done is that they've just continued to blow through the schedule, and they've passed the tests that they have taken with flying colors. They played a reasonably good out-of-conference schedule, albeit not as strong as what we're used to seeing. They certainly can. I think they're going to be set up to get to the second weekend fairly easily, but then you're talking about playing teams that are probably better than what they've been facing for most of the year. But I don't know. You look at that, like, that's a pretty damn good
They've resume. Done a lot, but and their biggest remaining test, they got 2 big tests left. They got a home game to end the season with St. Mary's, but Tytel, before that, they got this weekend the road trip to BYU, and this BYU team, how dangerous are they?
I think more dangerous than I thought they were a month ago. I mean, They're 21-7 after a 1-point win on the road at San Diego on Saturday. Six straight wins. I assume they're going to beat Santa Clara at home on Thursday to make it 7 straight. Then the Zags come to visit Saturday, and I think the win streak ends. But still, the best 3-point shooting team in the nation, over 42%, which means that they are going to stay in any game, and even if they're down a lot, they're not out of it. The reason they lost by 23 at Gonzaga last month was because they only made 6 threes. That's not going to happen all the time. Senior point guard TJ Haws, he's great. He's arguably only the third best BYU player in his own family. His brother Tyler is the all-time leading scorer in BYU history, and his dad Marty was an all-whack player at BYU, but he's the best player in the Haws family this month. 15.7 assists, 2 steals a game in February.
Yeah, and I really like the profile. There's 2 non-conference wins with Utah State and at Houston, looking better and better as well.
Yeah, cracking the rankings, which does matter. I think
thank you for pointing that out. They didn't make it in the coaches' poll. They did crack the AP, I'd say, at 23.
Yeah.
I hadn't actually noticed that until you mentioned that, David.
Yeah, and okay, for all you bracket gurus, oh, it's not on the team sheet. I know it's not on the team sheet, but the NABC committee basically works the same as the polls, so it matters. It's an indicator of what the advisors are going to say about them. Am I wrong? No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm never wrong.
A couple of the games this week, Gonzaga hosting San Francisco before their trip to BYU. St. Mary's, pair of must-win home games against Loyola Marymount and San Diego. We talked about their bubble, them being bubblish at the top of the show.
Okay.
But David, let's move over to...
Well, let's talk about St. Mary's real quick.
Well, I'd raise my hand at the top. Go ahead.
Okay, but like, oh,
just go back to the start of the show. Watch what David said about them.
All right, have they done it? I don't understand why you all like them so much. Okay,
let's go over to the conference that has the only undefeated team in the nation, and of course, we're talking about the Con Expo Con AGG, Las Vegas, Nevada, March 10th through 14th. Register now.
Yeah.
This is going to be a great event. We're going to be seeing here just a few weeks away.
Yeah.
Look at these tractors. Look at these front-end loaders. At
that. Yeah, and we can
– Case, like, John Deere. I mean, everybody's there. Oh, yeah. We want to talk basketball, though, David.
Yeah.
How about San Diego State?
Next week we are registering on the air.
San Diego State, we looked at them as having 2 big tests left, game to end the season at Nevada and the game that they played Sunday at Boise. They passed that test at Boise. to say they passed it with flying colors is an understatement, David.
This is a phenomenal team. This team is potentially Final Four good. They are one of the best defensive teams. I mean, they just smother everybody. And I know they haven't really played any high-octane offenses in this conference, but they are so, so good. And, you know, it's going to be fun seeing what they can do over in New York City when the NCAA tournament starts.
we'll see where they get sent. I tell the other team in this conference that, I mean, I think if San Diego State just runs the table, it's maybe a one-bid league. But if San Diego State gets upset in the conference tournament, it'll probably be by the team in second place right now. But how about Utah State, and can they make the field without winning the auto bid?
Very tough, but you see the 41 net ranking. That's going to keep them in the conversation. 21-7 after a 12-point win at Fresno on Saturday, 4 straight wins. Good time of year to be winning multiple games in a row, obviously. They got 3 cupcakes to finish the season, so they should have 24 wins entering the conference tourney. They're not going to lose games at the free throw line. 77% is top 20 in the nation. They also only have 2 seniors in their rotation, so I think the future looks bright for them as well. Sophomore center Nemias Kreda, he was up at the start of the year. He missed 12 of the first 16 games. He's been great the past 4. 16 points, 9 boards, 3 blocks a game. I think they are legit.
Yeah, can we pull up Colorado State real quick, Chad, right next to Utah State? And the reason I'm trying to – I'd like to point something out here. Colorado State – kind of white hot a little bit right now. And you see, well, okay, their home record 10-4 on the surface isn't that impressive, but that win that Utah State had at Colorado State occurred during a stretch when Colorado State had won, was it 7 out of 8 or 8 out of 9 or whatever.
They've been red hot, yeah.
Yeah. So in the committee, while on the team sheet, it doesn't look as impressive as it probably is. And if the committee's doing what they're supposed to do, which I have no reason to think that they're not, they're going to know that and maybe give them a little more credit for that win than what it appears on the team sheet.
I'll tell you what, if Utah State ends up being the top team out or the second team out, they're going to look at that game at Boise that they lost in unbelievable fashion.
Yeah.
Where they blew it. Boy, they had one of the greatest collapses I've ever seen in the final minute of a game, and then lost it in overtime. And
I turned it over. I missed it.
That may be the game that cost them. But I think it'll be real interesting. It's going to be tough for San Diego State to beat this Utah State team for a third time if they meet in the Mountain West Championship game.
Yeah.
Upcoming schedule in the Mountain West, we kind of discussed the most important games already. San Diego State, their game is only one game this weekend. They're hosting Vegas on Saturday. Let's jump over. We got a couple more leagues to go through real quickly. Let's talk about the Atlantic 10, where we've got Dayton sitting here at 12-0 now in conference. We thought we had a huge game coming up with them hosting Rhode Island last week, and it turned into a Dayton destruction. And Dayton had more trouble with UMass over the weekend than they did with Rhodey.
Well, how about you got to give Rhodey some credit? I mean, Dayton jumped out to a 17-point lead, and from that point on, it was neck and neck, and I think the final score was 16. Rhodey played them even for 37 minutes of that game.
They finished on a 67-66 run and still lost the game.
Yeah, they did. Dayton is stupid, stupid good. Even when they don't play well, they still end up winning, which is, what we saw over the weekend with them. I think that the committee is going to put them on the two line. I don't know if that's where I would personally have them. I know that that's where most of our committee's been putting them, and like where I think Tytel's been putting them. But, I mean – despite not having a win against a team that's probably going to be in the top half of the bracket, they are just blowing through everyone.
Well, they are, and a lot of us have been putting Rhode Island in as well. But Tytel, is there a third bid to be had here in the Atlantic 10, and maybe from the Richmond Spiders?
So you guys have been talking about Richmond the past couple weeks, and I've been shutting it down because they were missing Blake Francis, their junior shooting guard, and leading scorer with a fractured sternum. I thought he was going to be gone for another month. Good news, he's back. He missed only 6 games, and he's averaged 15 points a game in his past 3 since returning. So I'm starting to believe 19-6 after a huge win over VCU on Saturday, 4 straight. They only had to face Dayton and Rhode Island once each, which is good. If they win out their final 6 regular season games, which are winnable because they don't involve Dayton or Rhode Island, they're going to have 25 wins entering the conference tourney, which means you have to consider them.
41st
in the nation with 36% from behind the arc, and 41st in the nation by allowing 30% from behind the arc. They're equivalent.
Go ahead, Tytel.
They also start 5 juniors, so if Obi Toppin heads to the draft, I think they're going to be the conference favorite next year.
Yeah, and if you go back real quick, Chad, I mean, with the 25 wins, there's only one loss on that resume that smells really bad, and that's Radford. And you talk about beating Wisconsin and Rhodey away from home. I think that you put them in. I think that if they win out, which they can, all those games are winnable. I agree. I think Richmond gets in.
Well, it's interesting. Let me put Rhode Island up here on the left here, because as things are playing out right now, these are going to be your 2 seed and your 3 seeds in the A-10 tournament. If they meet in a A-10 semifinal, that could be for a bid. Now, they both might still make it, but that could be a winner is in no matter what. Loser sweats things out. Rhode Island obviously had the bad loss in the Ocean State Tournament Championship game to Brown.
The Ocean State. And you got to just – the resilience of this team to bounce back after such a heartbreaking loss.
upcoming schedule here in the – in the A-10 real quick, and then we've got one more conference to hit before we're done. We've got the Dayton is going to VCU and then hosting Duquesne this week. We mentioned the Richmond and the Rhode Island games as well. VCU pretty much on life support, if not gone already,
dead,
unfortunately.
Dead.
Yeah, well, but let's
to say it's important to schedule tough games. May I point you to St. Joe's 17th in the country strength of schedule? How's that working out for Coach Lang?
This
is a team that beat UConn, by the way.
let's. Speaking of UConn, their conference is the last conference. We're not going to talk about them much, though. The American, where just one of these head scratching leagues, where just when you think we had everything figured out with Houston being the top team, and maybe Cincinnati being there. Well, Cincinnati bounced back with a couple wins. Wichita bounced back with a couple wins, but Titel, SMU knocks off Houston. Or should I say Dallas beats Houston if you watch the game?
The offense, this team does it with offense. 10th in KenPom in offense, bottom outside the top 200 in defense. But they're getting it done when it needs to count. 22-point loss at Cincinnati to finish January. You thought you could stick a fork in them, but they won 3 of 4. The fourth was an overtime loss at Temple, so it's somewhat excusable or at least explainable. And the overtime win against Houston puts them at 18-6. Top 25 in the nation, 77% from the free throw line. No seniors in the rotation, which is bad this year in terms of if they're in a crisis situation. Good next year if everybody comes back. Sophomore point guard Kendrick Davis, he missed the first four games of the season. He's back. He's been great this month. 17 points, 5 boards, 9 assists a game for the sophomore.
Well, Titel, so is SMU on your board? Could they make the field with these 6 games left?
As of today, they are not on my board. The fact that Memphis and Wichita are winnable, because a month ago I would have said there's no chance. They're both at home with teams who are trending down, right? I think those are winnable.
Memphis is not trending down. They're just down.
Wichita State, though, David, they had a bad couple weeks. They had a good week this week in terms of they just blew through a couple of opponents.
Yeah, they did. And whatever was sort of was wrong in the locker room or wrong on the court, they appeared to get fixed. And there is, I think, enough season left. When you look at the road games at Cincinnati, SMU, and Memphis, while none of those teams are certainly in on the first ballot, if they win all 3 of them or 2 of the 3, I think that they're going to be okay on Selection Sunday. And, of course, they have to hold serve in the other games. But looking much better, whatever it is, they had a team meeting and everybody's happy, and it certainly showed this week.
Here's the upcoming schedule in the American. Cincinnati is hosting UCF and Wichita. Probably the big game is Sunday's game, Wichita at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Early in the year, we would have said Houston at Memphis is a big game, but I'd be shocked if Memphis could hang with Houston, especially with Houston bouncing back off of what happened last weekend with the SMU game. On that note, though, let's run to any of their final thoughts here. And Titel, let me start with you.
Nothing earth-shattering. I like the fact that the Aztecs are 3 games away from finishing 29-0, which is something we've not seen in a very long time. I like the fact that the Pac-12 and the Ivy League, 2 of my conferences, have many teams that are still alive, and it's going to go right down to the wire. And, of course, as a fan, I hope everybody has a chance next Saturday to watch Kansas at Baylor. I think it's going to be fantastic.
Absolutely. Definitely circled. That might be the game of the year. David, you want to finish off the show?
Yeah, again, getting back to Houston, it's just been a rough week for them. You know, just dropping the 2 games that you expected to hear or that you would expect them to win, and they kind of had a rougher time earlier in the year dropping some. I still think that their ceiling is high, but when you look at some of the games that they've lost and when you look at some of the trouble they're having with the commissioner and the sign stealing, it's just been a rough week for Houston.
On that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back again later this week with Under the Radar and a Bracket Rundown show. But on behalf of David Griggs and John Titel, I'm Chad Sherwood. We'll talk to you again real soon.